This message comes from On Point sponsor, Indeed. If you're hiring, with Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on your short list of qualified candidates using an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/NPR podcast.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
While he was hanging from the noose around his neck, they dismembered parts of his body as souvenirs, and the crowd randomly shot around 2,000 bullets into his hanging body.
That is Tarabu Kirkland. His grandfather's friend, John Hartfield, was lynched in Mississippi in 1919. And that is the reality of lynching in America. It is a horrible, violent, dark mark in the history of this nation. So, of course, there's powerful reaction to the President of the United States yesterday tweeting that a constitutional impeachment inquiry is akin to a lynching. But President Trump is not the first to hijack history in this way. Clarence Thomas in 1991. The Democrats, too, to serve their political purposes in 1998. So what do we all lose when politics subsumes? Now, when politics weaponizes history like this, that's what we're going to take a look at this hour on Point, facile politics and the complex truth about lynching. And we do want to hear from you. What was your reaction when you read or heard that President Trump had tweeted about lynching yesterday? Do you think any of us appropriately recognize what happens when history is invoked in politics? And joining us first today from Washington is Congressman James Clyburn. He's a Democrat representing Columbia, South Carolina. He's also House Majority Whip as well. Congressman Clyburn, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Congressman, first tell me, when you read that the president had invoked lynching as a response to the House's impeachment inquiry, what was your first reaction?
Well, I was a bit incensed. But, you know, I don't think like so many people, you get to a point with this president that you don't get surprised by anything. So it was not surprising to me that he would try to change the subject and make it all about him. And it wasn't surprising that he would use these inflammatory terms in order to get his point made. But it's always disappointing when you see the presidency of the United States of America being brought down to such a low point in our discussions. I grew up in the South. Mm-hmm. I grew up, I'm old enough to have remembered lynchings. A lot of people tend to equate lynching with hanging. I used to until I learned better. One can be lynched violently in other ways. It's a violent act. Mm-hmm. There's nothing violent about carrying out the constructs of the Constitution of the United States of America. The Constitution lays out how the legislative branch should respond when questions are raised about the executive branch. You have hearings. You have investigations. In short, you have oversight. And that's what's taking place here. Mm-hmm. There's nothing violent about this process. And there's nothing about this process that takes away anybody's rights to exist as an American citizen. And this president, and it doesn't excuse it being used by anybody else. I've been made aware today that others have used this term and applying it to the political process. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever will, at least as long as I'm clothed in my right mind.
Right.
I just believe that we can have political discourse without misusing the political situation that we find ourselves in.
Well, Congressman, to the point you're making just now, I wanted to play two bits of tape, one from just this week and the other from history. First of all, your fellow South Carolinian, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, defended the president's comparison of the impeachment process to a lynching. And here's Senator Lindsey Graham.
What do you think about the fact that President Trump doesn't know who his accuser is? What do you think about the fact that the Republican minority cannot call witnesses, that everything's done behind closed doors? I can only imagine if this were a Democratic president, what you would be saying to me right now. So it shows a lot of things about our national media. When it's about Trump, who cares about the process, as long as you get him? So, yeah, this is a lynching in every sense. This is un-American.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham there just yesterday. Now, also recently, Congressman Gregory Meeks tweeted in response to the president. Congressman Meeks tweeted yesterday, quote, "I don't expect Trump to be sensitive to the weight of that word or see how insulting and hurtful it is to invoke it here." But in 1998, that same congressman, Mr. Meeks, in his first year in Congress, when the House voted to impeach President Bill Clinton, he said this about the impeachment process on the House floor.
What we are doing or what we are doing here is not a prosecution. It's a persecution. And indeed, it is a political lynching. The Republicans have had no agenda for over a year. And with this act today, they are signaling that they have no agenda for the future.
That's Congressman Gregory Meeks in 1998. Representative Clyburn, I just have one more question for you. I wonder, I mean, given the history of race and racialized violence in this country, ought we all not, shouldn't we all try harder, all of our elected officials, to not so quickly just drag in charged terms like this when trying to have sort of reasoned political debates?
Sure, that's quite true. Lindsey Graham knows better than that. He's a pretty astute lawyer. He ought not be saying that. What he described and ascribed the term to was what we have every day, all day in this country, and that's called grand juries. What definition he gave you is exactly what happens in grand juries all day, every day in this country. Those are not lynchings. Those are investigations. You don't have investigations in public. You do so in private so as not just to raise accusations about the guilty, but in order to protect the innocent. And you do not do that in public view. So his description was that of a grand jury operation, and that's what is taking place here. We had special counsels investigating the whole process of impeachment with Bill Clinton. Ken Starr did not do his investigation in public. He did it in private. And then he made his results public, to which the Congress then got a chance to react. And that's exactly what's taking place here. So we ought not throw those terms around. It's unfortunate that my colleague used that term. It's unfortunate when Clarence Thomas used that in his hearing. All we're doing here is having oversight, and that's as it should be.
Well, Congressman James Clyburn, Democrat of South Carolina. Congressman Clyburn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's turn now to Charles Blow. He's a New York Times columnist. He's been a columnist for the paper since 2008. He joins us from New York. Charles Blow, welcome to On Point.
Thanks.
First of all, let me ask you. I mean, I personally want to hold all politicians to account to be as responsible in their use of language and history as possible.
Hello?
But can you hear me, Charles?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Sorry, yeah, okay. Sorry. So I was just saying that that I would like to hold all politicians to account for being as responsible as possible in their use of language and history. But is there something particular in your mind about President Trump, given his relationship, his past behavior around race, and the use of the term lynching yesterday?
Right. So I think you're correct to invoke his history on race, because I think that he has demonstrated over and over again that, you know, that he has a racial problem.
Charles, can you still hear us?
And I think the bigger thing for him, the bigger thing around this issue,
Charles, I'm going to just jump in here on you because your line is very, very rough here. And so we're going to try and call you back and see if we can get a better line. But while we do that, let's go to Tom, who's calling from Manchester, Connecticut. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. I'm calling in response to the word being of African-American background. It goes back to our history for Klan violence. And after hearing Senator Graham, he and I are in the early 60s, I'm a second-wave baby boomer, I find it to be insulting because I think President Graham had to send in Union troops at one time to put down Klan rebellion and that in 1871 during Reconstruction. Secondly, different books that have come out, seeing those horrendous, you know, pictures and mutilation is very disgusting at our worst. And other groups have been lynched, Chinese, Native Americans, even Italians one time in the late 19th century. So it's an ugly part of our country's history in order to keep certain people not down and out, but show you in your place. And it was almost like a picnic atmosphere when I've seen pictures of families and children. And not for all whites, but those whites, when they talk about, you know, black predication of violence, I'm saying look in the mirror because some of the biggest terrorists have been whites at times. And they'll hide behind, you know, masks and sheets. It's the worst kind. And they should have been brought to justice, and they weren't. So that does anger me. But I do admire Ida B. Wells, who did a good research, and she almost cost her life. So I guess my message is to us that we need to watch using that word. And the president is a bigot anyways. I don't have that much respect for Donald J. Trump.
Well, Tom, I'm gonna take it back from here because we just have to dive straight into a break. But Tom from Manchester, Connecticut, thank you for your call. We are talking this hour not just about President Donald Trump's use of the word lynching regarding the House impeachment inquiry yesterday, but overall, what do we all lose when politicians invoke this period of U.S. history for their own political gain? We'll be back. This is On Point.
This message comes from On Point's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This week on Code Switch, a history that haunts the Florida Panhandle.
One of the most infamous lynchings in America happened in my town, Marianna, Florida.
Spending 2 years working on this story completely changed the way I saw race in America.
Listen and subscribe to NPR's Code Switch.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about what we all lose when politics weaponizes history, as it frequently does when it comes to lynching in America. Now, of course, today's conversation is based on the fact that just yesterday, President Donald Trump tweeted that the House impeachment inquiry against him is akin to a lynching. Back in 1991, during his confirmation process, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, then nominee Clarence Thomas, was questioned about sexual harassment claims made against him by Professor Anita Hill. He famously referred to lynchings during that process, and here he is.
And from my standpoint, as a black American, as far as I'm concerned, it is a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks who in any way deign to think for themselves, to do for themselves, to have different ideas. And it is a message that unless you kowtow to an old order, this is what will happen to you. You will be lynched, destroyed, caricatured by a committee of the U.S. Senate rather than hung from a tree.
Clarence Thomas on October 11th, 1991. Charles Blow is with us. He's a New York Times op-ed columnist, has been with the paper writing that column since 2008. Charles, let's keep our fingers crossed that your cell phone line is a little better now. I had asked you earlier, and we'll give you a reboot here, about whether this particular president's history with race sets his use of the phrase lynching apart from other instances when politicians have invoked the word.
And I guess I would say that I don't think so.
Okay.
Right? I think that what is happening is that there is a kind of explosive power to language around the white supremacist terror of black people in this country, whether that be the word lynching or the word slavery or the word plantation, and even further down the line all the way to reverse discrimination. And that all of that corruption of that language is around centering whiteness, whether it be used by someone like Clarence Thomas to play to white guilt, or whether it be someone like Donald Trump to play to white supremacy. It is about the reaction that use of that language can evoke among white people. And I think we have to be central to that, because what we have to keep that centered in the conversation, because what it is that it is a cheapening. It is a cheap ticket into kind of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
There is a growing sense in America, particularly among white Americans, that there is a benefit to victimhood. And people have tried to knock down the idea that victims should remember the victimization, when they can't do that, they say, "Well, I want part of it. I want some of the benefit of it." And part of trying to acquire the benefit of victimization without ever being a victim is to use the language of victimization, use the extreme examples of that. And I think that is what is happening in Trump, whether he's conscious of it or not, whether he's conscious of the race. I'm always ambivalent about how smart this man is. So I'm not sure if it's Machiavellian or if it's just that you have absorbed so much anti-other racism that it is a very natural thing that you can do without thinking.
Well, Charles, let me ask you. I mean, but when I go back and hear Congressman Gregory Meeks in 1998, an African-American man also invoking lynching, I mean, my concern is that any time a politician decides to, you know, turn to this explosive language for political use, it delegitimizes the fact of the history, the fact of the suffering, the fact of the actual violence that lynching entailed for centuries in this country.
And I think that you're right about that. And I think it is a lazy orator's way of using language, right? So what I mean by that is when you feel like you're an extreme and you have to reach for extreme language to express, some people go lazy. It's the same way you tell a kid, like, the kid starts cursing and you say, you know, that's because you're inarticulate. You can't express yourself. Find other words. And I think that these become the curses, the way of going extreme in a lazy way that is provocative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that when people do that, I look at that and say, oh, you know what? You could have done something. You could have said something else. You could have said what you meant by that. But you know that word is electric.
Yeah.
And it's easy and it's cheap.
Well, Charles Blow, columnist for The New York Times, joining us from New York. Charles, I'm a little nervous about the quality of the phone line, so I'm going to let you go for now. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, let's turn now to Atlanta, Georgia, where Isabel Wilkerson joins us. She is the award-winning author of The Warmth of Other Suns. That was a culmination of 15 years of research on the Great Migration. She won the Pulitzer Prize for Individual Reporting as well. Isabel Wilkerson, welcome to you.
Hello.
Also with us now from Memphis, Tennessee, is John Ashworth. He's executive director of the Lynching Sites Project of Memphis. It works to identify victims of lynching and create programming to foster conversations around the history of racial violence in this country. John Ashworth, welcome to you.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
So, Isabel, let me first start with you, and I'll throw the same question to both you and John. Just give me your initial reaction to when this issue of politicians invoking lynching came roaring back yesterday.
Well, to me, it was a reminder of how poorly taught we are about our country's history when it comes to this aspect of what is a uniquely American invention. And I really feel it necessary to say exactly what a lynching was. I think it's important for us to realize that it was a very specific public ritual of execution, by definition, outside of the rule of law. And lynchings usually followed a particular protocol, and they involved ritualized torture, maiming, mutilation, dragging of the victim, burning, castration, and ultimately killing of African Americans, primarily in our more recent history. And these were usually for some breach of the code of the Southern caste system. And that it's necessary also to know that in the first third of the 20th century, an African American was burned or hanged in a lynching every 4 days somewhere in the American South.
Hmm.
This is something that we're not taught, and that's perhaps one of the reasons why the word is used in such a way as to be in some ways disrespectful to the more than 4,000 people who suffered at the hands of lynch mobs.
Right. I mean, John Ashworth, I think Isabel Wilkerson makes an excellent point that we are shocked by the word, but not enough of us know why we're shocked.
And I fully agree with her that not enough of us are shocked. I think one of the other things is that when we say lynching, unfortunately, I think for a lot of people, our image of lynching has been shaped by the popular media, seeing a lynching in a cowboy movie or something like that and kind of passing on. But as she said, when you dig into the actual terror, the mutilation, it wasn't just the taking of life. It was a mutilation. It was a dehumanization that was intended to convey a message, to terrorize people and to further convey that they are less than other people. And so when this word is used in very simple context, it does not really convey the real horror that is there, and the terror that is still with us today.
Still with us today, meaning what?
Meaning, for example, the climate that we're in now, if we look, for example, at the taking of life, at the way lives are devalued. And when I say devalued, and I'll take the case of Philando Castile, an Eric Garner, I mean, we look clearly at what took place. We have the evidence, but we still can't get a conviction that this is something that was wrong. That is part of the climate that grew out of this racial terrorism that was the history of this country in the 19th and the first half of the 20th century and throughout.
Mm. Isabel Wilkerson, do you want to comment on that?
I would like to speak a little bit about the purpose of, or the alleged purpose of the lynching spectacles, and also how it affected people who were in that world. The purpose was essentially to terrorize and to dehumanize African Americans, to keep them in their place at the bottom of the hierarchy that existed in primarily American South, but it also was beyond that, and to socialize white Americans and to reinforce white supremacy, because there was a tremendous effort to get as many people to these events as possible. There would be as many as 15,000 people who would come together in order to observe a human being tortured, maimed, and ultimately sometimes burned alive at the stake or hanged. The people would come together, and people would be on dates. They would go on dates to these events. There are photographs that show that people were. There would be women, men, and children. Schools would be let out so children could attend. So this was part of a socialization project that occurred in our country, and that is why this also is relevant to our current day, because many generations of people were trained as to how to interact with other people, who to value and who not to value, as a result of what became a part of American culture for far too long and into the lifespan of people alive today.
Well, Isabel and John, stand by here for just a moment, because we do have a lot of callers who have thoughts to share. We're talking about what we all lose when politics weaponizes or even subsumes dark parts of U.S. history by referring to political actions as lynchings. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Muhammad, who's calling from New York City. Muhammad, you're on the air.
Yes, good. I'm calling just to make a point of the Republican Party seem to have find it very much at ease to toss in the political arena the lynching trope. And I just find that very disturbing. Also, the fact that, as Ms. Wilkerson pointed out, the historical aspects of that terrible period in American history, which is not taught in school, as she very well pointed out, is that I find that there's so much that's just ignored about the attitudes of among some whites that this was and somehow this was something that was a noble thing to do, this to brutalize African American men and women on false charges, and even to treat it as kind of a festive event.
Muhammad, hang on here for just a second. Again, we seem to be having poor luck with phones today, but don't hang up, Muhammad, because I do want to ask you to take us through a little more of your thinking about you're pointing specifically to the GOP here. But just to remind everyone, as I mentioned earlier in the show, in 1998, around President Clinton's impeachment, it was Democrats who were invoking the exact or almost identical language. I mean, here is Joe Biden, then Senator Joe Biden, in a 1998 interview with CNN.
Even if the president should be impeached, history is going to question whether or not this was just a partisan lynching or whether or not it was something that, in fact, met the standard, the very high bar that was set by the founders as to what constituted an impeachable offense.
Then Senator Joe Biden in 1998. So, Muhammad, in New York, how is that different than what you say the GOP does when it invokes the term?
Well, I don't put a lot of stock in, say, Joe Biden, because I think Joe Biden basically is he's a Democrat in name only. I believe his real political cosmology is more within the realm of republicanism, with the Republican Party as we know it today.
I see. Muhammad, thank you so much for your call. That's Muhammad from New York City. John Ashworth, let me turn back to you, because I heard both you and Isabel say clearly that part of the problem here is our lack of knowing. I mean, you're running a project right now that seeks to identify sites where these acts of violence happen. We don't even really fully know. It isn't part of our public consciousness, the very soil in which these places, these acts occurred.
No, it's not. The history of lynching and where lynchings occurred and the communities that they occurred in, that's not a part of the history that we talk about. Here in Memphis, we have the Lynching Sites Project. Equal Justice Initiative in Birmingham, Alabama, in Montgomery, Alabama, identified 20. Since we started our research, we now know about 36 lynchings that took place here in Shelby County. And we're in the process now of trying to identify those exact locations, put markers there, do the proper commemoration for that. But this is not a history that's taught. In one that we did in 2017, the L Persons, the students at the school found that this lynching occurred not too far from where their school. They'd never heard about it. They became involved and took the project on aside from us, and they put a marker up in addition to the marker that we put up. So younger people are wanting to know the truth about this history and what happened.
Isabel Wilkerson, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I think that one of the aspects that that we should be focusing in on is the fact of how very real this is for the people who are descended from those who suffered during that era. During the process of working on the book, The Warmth of the Sons, I interviewed over 1,200 people, and this was a very common, sadly common reference that they had that they made. Those who had fled the Jim Crow South during that era and then went north and west, this was such a common aspect of their lives that while we may not know where all of the markers are, those of us today, those who lived through it knew, and that was one of the reasons why they fled in the, to the degree that they did. And it was it's been said that this was such a common feature of the southern landscape that it would be the rare African American who had not either had a relative who had been lynched or knew of someone who had been lynched. And so the effort to try to reconcile and to give honor to those people who suffered at the hands of it, not just the targets, but also the family members who were often driven from the land, driven from their hometowns, to flee the violence that extended beyond just the person, but to the community at large.
Well, we are talking this hour with Isabel Wilkerson and John Ashworth. We're talking about what gets lost when we don't honor the actual history of what lynching is and was in America, and when it's thrown around as a political phrase. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about what we all lose as a nation when politics weaponizes words like lynching and ignores the actual history of what lynching is and was in the United States. Of course, it happened yesterday when President Donald Trump sent out a tweet calling the House impeachment inquiry against him a lynching. In 1998, it was congressional Democrats who were calling the GOP's impeachment of then-President Clinton a lynching. And of course, in 1991, Clarence Thomas called his confirmation hearings to the Supreme Court a high-tech lynching. So that's how politics has used the phrase. But it has a reality. It has a dark, violent reality in this country. So let's listen to the voice of Shira Dedman. When her grandmother passed away, Shira and her sister learned that their grandfather, Thomas Miles, had been lynched in 1912 in Shreveport, Louisiana. And in an audio series from the Equal Justice Initiative, Shira Dedman reflects on the impact that her grandfather's murder had on her family.
When I found out all that information, I started crying, mostly for my grandfather, the pain he went through, and then crying for my mom and her family, because I started to understand how the pain that he suffered affected his relationship with his family, how something like this can impact generations.
That's Shira Dedman in an audio series from the Equal Justice Initiative. I'm joined today by John Ashworth. He's with us from Memphis, Tennessee. He's the executive director of the Lynching Sites Project of Memphis. And Isabel Wilkerson also joins us from Atlanta. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of The Warmth of Other Suns. Now, Isabel, before the break, you were talking about the intergenerational impact of this. I mean, reflect on what we heard Shira Dedman just say.
Well, these are atrocities that end up being borne by the families who have lost so much that we can't even begin to imagine. Many of the people had to scatter and flee because violence would then attend to other people within the family system. In other words, sometimes when they could not, when the posse or the committee of six, as it was often known, could not find the actual person that had been accused, they would just kill whoever was around. They would bring in other people and lynch them as well. So whenever there was a lynching, it's not just the body that we see hanging from the limb of the tree in the photographs that have become sad reminders of what was a part of American history, but also the many, many people beyond, the parents, the children, the sisters and brothers, the relatives of the individual who we see, and then how these families had to scatter. So there was the lynching itself, and then there was the aftermath to the rest of the family and the community, which is one of the things that led to the great migration of people who fled the South. 6 million people ended up leaving, in part because of this terrorism that they were living with, day in and day out while they were there.
Well, let's go to Kurt, who's calling from Beacon Falls, Connecticut. Kurt, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I hear all this going on, and myself, I'm appalled by most of this. As you said before, weaponizing words. Well, the definition of lynching is a premeditated extrajudicial killing by a group. It is most often used to characterize informal public executions by a mob in order to punish an alleged transgressor, convicted transgressor, or to intimidate a group. It says nothing about blacks. I am tired of everyone right off the bat playing the race card. This is wrong. Lynchings were done out in the Midwest. Well, mobs did it. I think this is horrible, and I think it goes against NAACP and black people when people keep using these words, and right off the bat, everyone calls it a race issue. This is not a race issue, what this word is.
Mm.
This word, look it up in the Webster Dictionary. I'm appalled that for some reason everyone plays the race card right off the bat.
Well,
I don't believe President Trump was playing the race card there. I believe he was talking about the actual meaning of the word, as I just said, a mob coming after someone.
Yeah, don't hang up yet. I mean, I take your point. A dictionary definition is one thing, but what about the actual reality of the overwhelming number of victims of lynching in America, and that they were black Americans? I mean, that's the reality.
That's the reality, but why do we have to play that race card all the time? Why can't we? I mean, unfortunately, when black people play that race card, it's basically going against they're being prejudiced against white people. That word was never meant to be used like that. It's in the Webster's Dictionary. I understand that's the kind of what people's kind of vision in their mind when they hear that word.
Mm.
But all of a sudden, it went. You guys and everyone in the meeting went right to the black card, right to the race card.
Well, Kurt, actually, don't hang up here. But I just do want to get something in here. I mean, not overreacting from the position of pure politics. Excuse me, pure politics is exactly why we're having this conversation, because we want to explore the actual history. So this isn't a playing of the race card. This is confronting historical fact. I mean, and I just want to know if you accept the fact that the overwhelming victims of lynching in America were black.
I accept that fact, okay. But also too, as one of your elite person said, you watch any old Western movie, and there were lynch mobs out there, and there weren't black people that were getting lynched, and there's a history of that, too, out in the Midwest, where mobs took over and would take people out of jails and wouldn't wait for a judge, and they were white people, and they lynched them, too.
Hmm. Well, Kurt, thank you so much for your call. John Ashworth, how would you like to respond to Kurt?
Yeah, thank you. And he's right. There were lynchings that you saw in the West, and there were, in fact, whites lynched. But I do not know, to give a graphic case, I do not know of a single lynching of a white person that came close to what was done to Mary Turner, a woman pregnant by 8 months in Valdosta, Georgia, that she was hung up by her feet. And I don't want to go completely graphic, but suffice to say she was 8 months pregnant. The baby was killed. The woman was killed. Her stomach was split open. So when we talk about lynching, it's not just the taking of a life. It is a message of terror that was directed against African Americans, intended to make them, one, stay in that place, and two, force them to give up their labor to try and return them to the status that they had before the Civil War. That was a terror campaign. It wasn't just the taking of life. It was a terror campaign intended to not just get the perpetrator, but to send a message to a group of people.
Isabel Wilkerson, in Kurt's call, and I appreciated him calling in because I think he shines a bright light on what is still at the heart of the fundamental struggle we have about race in this country, and that is that even in just exploring the truth about history, some people hear it as playing the race card. And I'm just wondering what you think about that.
I think all of us would so wish that lynchings never occurred ever in our country's history, and so many of us would wish that African Americans had not been the vast majority of those who suffered and perished in the horrific atrocities that occurred. I think that it's part of my response to it is to remind people of exactly what happened in the course of a lynching that was different from from his rightful reference to the Western vigilante justice that occurred in the 19th century. And what happened in the West was because there was no formal court legal system in the Wild West, in the frontier. But what we're speaking about are lynchings that occurred where there were, in fact, formal legal systems in place. There was a courthouse, there were judges, there were juries, and yet people were kidnapped from their homes or from the prison cells. They were dragged to a particular place. Thousands of people had been given advance warning so they could catch excursion trains to come in, to witness, to be part of, to celebrate what they felt was their duty as people in the, you know, the dominant group in the South. The contrary to what is often said about the accusers, people not being able to see their accusers, the accusers were front and center in these lynchings. They often were the ones who were given the first chance to shoot or to stab or whatever was the means that they were using at that time. So that this, and then after it was done, after the person was killed, hours later, where these were hours-long spectacles of torture, mutilation, and then ultimately killing, then the crowd, the mob, frenzied as it was, would then cut off the fingers and the toes, and they would be distributed as souvenirs. There were postcards that people would send. People were not ashamed or embarrassed by the focus on race. Yeah. The people who were part of this made this a racial issue. They were happy to send off postcards to their in-laws and former neighbors to let them know that they had attended this, and the language that they would use in the note would often make reference to the person's race. Right. So this was made racial by the people who participated and attended, the spectators, and everyone involved. Remember, there was only one African-American at these events. This is not African-American history. This is American history.
Well, Isabel and John, hang on here for just a second because I do want to get a few more callers before we run out of too much time. So Ricky is calling from Columbus, Georgia. Ricky, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to say I had some different things I was going to say until Kirk called in. He read his own definition, and he said that Trump should be exonerated from using it by definition. But by definition, lynching refers to extrajudicial killing. It refers to execution, and it's a so he didn't make his own point. And as far as it being a race issue, we are in an atmosphere of blackface. These are words that black people doing blackface, the alt-right has been thrown around, what happened in Charlottesville with regard to President Trump, and as many unarmed blacks that are being killed right now by police. Quite, yes, of course. This, it's not that the show or any, and I like what you said about it, because it has to be discussed, and it's not making it playing the race card.
Right.
These things are going to continue to come up because they permeate the very atmosphere that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Ricky, I'm going to take it back from you there, and I do appreciate your call so much. I just want to be able to get a couple more people in here. Ricky from Columbus, Georgia, thank you. Let's go to Dwight, who's calling from Key West, Florida. Dwight, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to bring up the point that while I understand how powerful the word is based on its historical context, I also want to bring up the point that it seems a little hypocritical at times that we address this issue now that the president made the comment, but we don't address previous examples of the same act, which is, you know, people using the word Nazi nowadays. Everyone seems to be a Nazi that seems to approve or side with the president's opinions or views or politics. It's something that's kind of, it's a one-sided coin, it seems like, often. Because, you know, there's a lot of Americans here in this country today that are family members or are themselves survivors of the Holocaust and suffered at the hands of Nazis. And there's no news story, right. There's no context applied to that.
Yeah, well, so Dwight, thank you for your call and for bringing up that example, because I do want to play a moment from June 2019, which is only a couple of months ago, but it feels like 8 trillion news cycles ago. But this is when Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez referred to migrant detention centers along the U.S.-Mexico border as concentration camps.
The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border, and that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps.
As Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in June of this year, she received a lot of pushback for that. But John Ashworth and Isabel Wilkerson, we've got about 3 minutes left here, and I want to just lean on your deep expertise here, because whenever politicians use any historically charged word, they might be doing it irresponsibly, but they're also raising that moment of history once again in our consciousness. So I suppose what I want to know from both of you, and John, I'll just give you first crack at this, is, you know, how should we should all be, I don't know, expecting more of our politicians? How should they be invoking history? There must be better ways.
Yes, we should expect more of our politicians, but we should also expect the people to put more pressure on our politicians to respect what it is that they are doing. I think we have to have courageous conversations, and we have to have those conversations across racial lines to be very honest about what it is. Politicians will do what they perceive that the people that put them in office want done. And so we, the people, need to up this conversation about what the true climate culture is of racism in this country and of what this lynching and this terror campaign actually did.
Mm. Isabel Wilkerson, what do you think?
I think that these moments give us a time to pause and to reconsider and to reconcile our own history as to how we got to where we happen to be right now, and to actually learn what our country has experienced. You know, we like to think of ourselves as a just and fair nation, and so when we are confronted with what were essentially human rights atrocities that occurred within our own country, under the American flag, within the lifespan of people who are alive today, it can be very, very difficult to reconcile these things. And I think that this is an opportunity for us to really get to know how we got to where we are. I'd like to actually quote from a president who did make reference to lynching in the accurate way, in the historic way, and that was Theodore Roosevelt, who happened to have been a Republican. And he wrote a letter to the governor of Indiana after a horrific lynching, and he was distraught by it, disgusted by it, and he wrote, "There are certain hideous sights which, when once seen, can never be wholly erased from the mental retina." In other words, he was saying that this is such a particularly egregious spectacle that this should not be happening in the United States. And those are the words of Theodore Roosevelt, a previous president who was Republican.
Well, Isabel Wilkerson, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of The Warmth of Other Suns, speaking to us from Atlanta, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And John Ashworth, executive director of the Lynching Sites Project of Memphis, with us from Memphis, Tennessee. John Ashworth, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.